We are 1 week out from the legislative session, and as it's been for the past few sessions, affordable and available housing opportunities will most likely be a topic of conversation among lawmakers. We've made it a point here on WICC in the mornings to talk about the issue of finding more housing. We have a housing shortage. We have a crisis on our hands, and it's the same basically across the country. But obviously, we're focused on what's happening here in Connecticut. So we have monthly check-ins with Connecticut Housing Partners, also known as CHP. CHP is a nonprofit. They have been creating housing opportunities in Connecticut for the past 30 years. And so back on the show with us to talk more about this is CEO Renee Dobis. Hey, Renee, how are you? Welcome back.
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. First of all, Renee, as we enter into the legislative session, which starts on February 7th, what are some goals of CHP? What would you like to see lawmakers tackle this time around when it comes to creating more opportunities for housing that's also what people can afford to live in?
Well, actually, I was on a panel discussion, and Senator Bob Duff was there, Senator Marilyn Moore, Representative Jason Rojas. They were on the panel, and they actually outlined some of the things that they're focused on. And especially that's important in Fairfield County, they're looking at the stock of land that the state has. Not that they are planning on turning all of the stock into opportunities for affordable housing, but they do recognize that the price of land in Fairfield County is prohibitive and that it really slows down the ability for developers in Fairfield County to build affordable housing. So I thought that that was a really interesting concept.
Renee, do you mind actually just explaining to folks, when you say stock of land, are you talking untouched land? Or are you talking about blight properties? What do we mean by stock of land?
Well, I don't actually know what the inventory of the state's land holdings are.
Okay.
I don't know if there's buildings on them or anything like that. But they had indicated that the state does have a vast amount of land that it owns.
Okay.
So they are looking at that to try to determine if any of it can be converted to affordable housing or used for affordable housing.
Okay.
I got the impression that some of the land is near our highways and things like that that would lead to expansion. They probably wouldn't be looking at that, but they did say that they had other opportunities that they were looking at.
Okay. No, I was curious. I mean, and that very well could, I would imagine, could be true. I know just earlier this week, actually, I had come across something, didn't realize this was a thing for 10 years, though. But like in Ansonia, for example, they have this app where people can report blight properties. And all they do is go into the app, they report it. And apparently the manager of these blight properties or going and handling these blight property complaints, he gets like 8 of them a day. That's according to Mayor Cassetti. And when I asked Mayor Cassetti about this, I said, so then what? These are just kind of vacant properties or they're just sort of, he's like, they're handled. But then, yeah, that's like available real estate, essentially, unless it's owned by the bank. And so I that's where my wheels are kind of turning. When they say vast amount of land owned by the state, I'm wondering if that's because we have seen that in some areas, you know, Ansonia just being an example, but even like in Bridgeport, where we have blight properties that are being knocked down. And then what do we do with it?
Right, right. Well, you know, that's up to the local municipality, what they want to do with it.
Mm.
And, you know, we're hopeful that, you know, they'll be responsible enough to really think about their affordable housing stock and try to meet that 10% goal that all municipalities have been asked to reach by the state of Connecticut. And the reason why it's so important, you know, right now we have a shortage of 92,500 units of affordable housing. And lack of housing is holding the state back economically. So it's going to impact all of us in some way. And, you know, if you imagine if we could create 92,500 units of affordable housing, that's jobs. That's jobs that can be added to the state, because then we would be able to attract business into the state.
Yeah. And so I want to talk also, Renee Dobis is here, who's the CEO of CHP. It's a nonprofit. They've been developing and creating housing opportunities across Connecticut for 30 years. I mean, they've done a lot of great work over the years. And they really, what I love about you is you're local and you advocate for the you know, for the good of residents. And one of the things that I think I loved firsthand when we first connected over a year ago, Renee, was the fact that, you know, your team really does want to create opportunities for people who are, you know, like for example, the working class. You've got people who are just trying to do their jobs in the cities or towns that they are hired to work in, but they can't live there because there's either nowhere for them to live. And if there are places to live, they're just way outside of what they can afford to live by unless they have people cram in there with them. And that's just not great either. So I wanted to talk about that. And is CHP hoping that lawmakers also look at the fact that sometimes with these quote unquote affordable housing complexes, really what they are developers a lot of the times from outside the state of Connecticut coming in, making a boatload of money and really only offering maybe a handful of affordable housing units. And the majority of those complexes are still not affordable for the average Connecticut resident. Is that something that you'd also like lawmakers to focus on as well?
I would like them to focus on it, and that would be the current state statute called 830G, which is allowing these market rate developers to come in, bypass local planning and zoning, if they provide 30% of those units as being affordable. I have tried to lobby to tell lawmakers they need to increase that percentage, and it needs to be well above 50%, because if it is, then these market rate developers, they won't come in and try to take advantage of that planning and zoning opportunity. And that's why all the different municipalities are so frustrated, because they feel they have no control. And so then it enters into this lawsuit between the developer and the town. And, you know, municipalities have limited resources, too. So they don't want to use their resources fighting in court.
Right.
And, you know, I'm going to bring a town into focus that right now where this is really playing out. And that's New Canaan. And New Canaan is really been trying to fight against adding affordable housing, their leadership. The town folk, they're for affordable housing. They're actually putting signs in their front yards saying yes to more affordable housing. And I'm so proud of that movement that's happening. And, you know, when you think about New Canaan, I actually took a quote out of the paper where they said officials are saying that they want affordable housing, but the preservation of the district was essential to protecting the town's environment and historical resources. So, you know, they're trying to find all the loopholes they can to try to discourage affordable housing in their community. Now, there's 7,500 units in New Canaan, you know, mostly private homeowners. So that means they'd only need 750 units of affordable housing to reach their 10% goal. Right now, they have less than 3%, which is about 200 units. So they need, instead of trying to fight this, they need to come up with a plan to get to 750 units, because it's attainable. 500 units isn't that much, and they can be able to do that. And but then, you know, the median income in New Canaan is $250,000. So that means exactly what you said earlier. Your firemen, your teachers, your nurses can't live in the community that they're serving.
Which is crazy. And the other thing too, Renee, which we've talked about a lot on this show, is that a lot of the pushback from municipalities is not only because they've got developers who basically just have to do the bare minimum and they get to make a bunch of money and interrupt towns in the way that they are running things without a care in the world, because they're making money and they don't care. They're following the rules technically. But the other part of it is that there's a really bad connotation with the term affordable housing. When you hear affordable housing, people immediately are thinking just probably the worst of the worst. Whereas really, when you're talking about the people that you're serving, it could very well be people who are poor. But I think a lot of the times you're talking about just the general population in Connecticut. You're talking about postgraduate from college looking to land on my feet somewhere. You're looking at workers who just want to live and work in the same town. You're looking at people who have lived in Connecticut their whole lives and yet they need to downsize. But where can they go where it's affordable and there are not a lot of options for our aging population in Connecticut? So I think just changing the term of affordable housing also has become a huge problem for towns as well. Would you agree?
I would agree with that. And I try to use the term workforce because that's really who we're housing.
Oh, I like that. Workforce housing? I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. We have Renee Dobis here, who is the CEO of CHP. CHP is a nonprofit. They have been developing and creating housing opportunities in Connecticut for the past 30 years. They do not have a political agenda. They literally want to create opportunities for people who live and work and age here in Connecticut to continue living here, but actually being able to afford living here. So they call it workforce housing. I love that, Renee. Let's make that catch on. I like that a lot, because I do think sometimes it's all in the presentation for people to really understand right. what we're talking about. We had a couple of calls, actually. First of all, people love when you come on, Renee, because you give people hope that we can create more housing opportunities. So thank you for committing to coming on every month and discussing this. We had one woman who called in from Bridgeport, and I actually had another woman who called in from outside of our listening area, but she listens along the shoreline going up the coast of Connecticut. They both talked about blight, vacant, knockdown properties. So they kind of go one and the same. The woman who lived up the coastline, she said, you know, after the New London Church collapsed in January, is that a property that CHP, for example, could be considered by the state to turn that into housing? And kind of piggybacking that, this woman in Bridgeport said, has CHP considered issuing like a moratorium, I'm not sure if it's something you can do, for cities to use blight or vacant properties to just be looked at as potential housing? Like, they have to pursue seeing if there are housing opportunities at these properties that are just sitting and being totally wasted. Like, is there a way that there could be a moratorium that gets passed by lawmakers or something for at least the cities to have to address these vacant blight properties and potentially turn it into housing?
Yeah, so to go back to the blight, I do think a lot of municipalities do have laws on the books to deal with blight. Often it's fines that are imposed upon the current owner of the property, or sometimes the property is turned over to the city and then the city makes a determination what they want to do with it. And then in regards to the church, yes, we can certainly look at something like that, but the church owners would have to be willing to either sell us the property. I don't know much more about that church, and I know the church collapsed, but I don't know if they plan on rebuilding or if they plan on doing something else. But they can certainly reach out to us. We're working with a couple other churches right now. Because unfortunately, what's happening in the church arena is that since COVID, attendance has really dropped. People haven't really been going back to church. So some churches are struggling financially, and that could have been one of the reasons why this church maybe has some deferred maintenance on it, and that's why it collapsed. Not sure of the story. But yes, we absolutely will talk to anybody who has land or building or, you know, existing building that's sitting on a property, blighted property. You know, we'll look at anything and see if we can work it into the plan.
So another thing, Renee, as we continue to talk about, you know, like the upcoming session, just to kind of circle back, because I do think what you were starting mm-hmm. off the conversation with really does sort of connect back to what these callers were asking, which is, is there land that is just sort of not being used, like wasted opportunities? I think one of the first times you came on the show, I had asked you this question, which is, do you think CHP is top of mind for the governor, for, you know, the average lawmaker? Do people know about CHP? And if they don't, how do we get you on the radar? Because I do think it's an answer for so much of the debate surrounding this. You, again, are local developers. You care about the Connecticut resident. You are like in line with what I think both sides are looking for. And I feel like you're this solution that's kind of like a hidden secret in some ways. And I don't like that. I don't want that.
Well, thank you for that. I hope we're not a hidden secret. I hope people know who we are. But yes, lawmakers know who we are. You know, we actually, the Housing Roundtable reached out to myself and my colleague, Steve Gulick, Vice President of Real Estate Development, and they actually discussed with us what we thought were barriers to affordable housing, because the Housing Roundtable is trying to learn, and they're trying to figure out, okay, what can we do to move the needle and try to build more affordable housing as quickly as possible? You know, we interface with the Department of Housing and the Connecticut Housing Finance Authority as well. So, you know, our pipeline is full, our pipeline is robust. We can't work fast enough or build fast enough. And so, yes, they know who we are. They do reach out to us to get our opinion. You know, funding is an issue as well. And, you know, the state is making a commitment. They're putting more funding towards affordable housing. That's something that the state legislature is focused on. They understand that housing stock equals jobs, which equals economic security for the state of Connecticut. They recognize a barrier is local planning and zoning laws, where a lot of the municipalities have single-family zoning. They don't have multifamily zoning. So that's why they're really reaching out to municipalities to say to them, all right, well, if you don't want a 200-unit building in your community, how about a duplex? How about a triplex? How about a quadplex? You know, they're really trying to make those connections. And they're trying to understand from the developer perspective, from the planning and zoning perspective, from the state perspective, so that they can try to put forth some ideas and rules to help. They did admit that they're not sure if there's political will up at the state house. And they did admit that there is NIMBYism, and it does exist, and they recognize that that's a barrier. They also admitted, like we discussed earlier, that what does affordable housing mean? That there needs to be education on that, and that, you know, we need to make it a positive term, and it has to be a positive thing in the community. It is not a negative, because diversity is extremely important. You know, we all live here together, and there's no reason why one community is going to keep out certain people and not embrace them. That's just not appropriate in our world. It just isn't.
Yeah. Well, we certainly know that the fight is far from over, and we have a crisis on our hands, and we're going to keep tackling it and certainly talking about it here on the show. Renee, I want to thank you again so much for always committing to coming on the show every month and talking about this, updating us. And certainly we will see what happens as the legislative session gets up and running in just a few days. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. And again, Renee Dobis is the you too. Renee is the CEO for CHP. And if you ever want any more information about the work that they do, you want to get involved, you can also donate to their cause. Go to CTHousingPartners.org. Again, CTHousingPartners.org.